welcome to the Media Matters podcast presented by myself, Colette Sexton, news correspondent at the Sunday Business Post. In each episode, we talk to an expert in the media and marketing industry and pick their brain on the topics that matter. My first guest for 2019 is Lois Capilla, co-founder of the Dublin Inquirer, an independent weekly online newspaper launched in June 2015 to provide quality coverage of city affairs. It is published online weekly on Wednesday mornings and in print monthly mid-month. Lois has worked as a journalist across Asia, in America and in Europe. She studied at the University of Oxford and the London School of Economics and Political Science. Welcome, Lois.
Hi, Colette. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining me.
Thanks
for having me. First podcast of 2019. This is very exciting.
It is very exciting.
So how or why or what on earth were you thinking setting up the Dublin Inquirer?
Yeah, I know. It seems like completely mad and a little bold, I guess, not only because, yeah, obviously I'm not from Dublin.
You don't exactly have a strong Dublin accent.
I'm working on it. and also, yeah, setting up a local newspaper in today's world is also doubly insane. I guess Sam, my husband and sort of deputy editor, and I moved here maybe about sort of 5.5 years ago-ish. And before that, I had been a reporter in a few different places, including at one point in the US, working really, really briefly for a kind of alt-weekly, just over a summer kind of internship-y kind of thing called Washington City Paper. And they did all this kind of really cool, like, longer form narrative, local journalism. And that kind of stuck with me, that experience, because it was so completely different from so much of the local news that I'd read kind of growing up in the Fens in the UK. So when I moved to Dublin, I kind of did a little bit of freelancing and did a bunch of different really kind of boring jobs, and I was sort of trying to get into the media here, and I just sort of thought that there was lots going on in the city that maybe wasn't being covered, and that maybe there were voices that weren't being heard from. And I, in all honesty, I got a little drunk and I said I'd start a newspaper. And then Sam said, right now you have to. And so then we did. Yeah.
It must be interesting to work with your husband. How do you guys manage that?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we've always kind of done different projects together. Like, so before we moved to Ireland, I was working in India at a newspaper called The Statesman in Calcutta for a couple of years. And he, when we first moved over there, he was working for a kind of energy business publication. But then he left that to also come and work at The Statesman. So we kind of worked together there, and we did projects, sort of different books while we were there together. And yeah, it's sort of, I don't know, I think it goes okay. Like, we have to sort of try not to only talk about work. But I think,
well, it's been a couple of years now, you're still talking. So, yeah. You know, that's a good sign.
Exactly. He's very good at just letting me sort of giving guidance, but like, I guess ultimately sort of letting me make decisions sometimes. So, yeah.
And in terms of the Dublin Inquirer, how did you guys launch it? Where did you get the money for it? And how are you funding it since?
Yeah, so that's obviously like that was a big issue. We applied for a bunch of different grants, but didn't manage to get any of them. So in the end, I guess I borrowed a bunch of money off like 6 or 7 kind of relatives. We've gotten a couple of bank loans over the years that we're still paying one off. Sam works full time. So I don't really pay myself very much at the moment. And we put money from his salary in each month to prop it up. And then we've been doing kind of work on the side as well, copy editing, sort of subbing. I did some translation for a bit after I sort of moved back, you know, when we were getting started. Just bunches of little bits of work that all kind of goes into the newspaper as well, which kind of, you know, sustainable for a while we're building up, but obviously it's not something that you can do forever because it's kind of exhausting as well.
I mean, yeah, that's a lot of work that you're taking on there, but it must be a real passion project for you to continue to pursue it.
Yeah, I guess I think because it can be really sustainable, and like it has kind of evolved from that initial idea of trying to look more like what the US sort of alt weeklies were into a more sort of community member reader focused kind of model, looking at all the different ways we can get readers involved in journalism, and a really sort of you know, being interested in how we change that relationship with the people who kind of subscribe to support the journalism with money, but also can get involved in different projects. So, I really think that is, like, if I didn't think that this was going to work and be fully sustainable sort of in the hopefully not too distant future, then I wouldn't wouldn't be doing it.
You mentioned there your kind of focus on readers, and earlier in 2018 the Dublin Inquirer commissioned a survey of homeless people to get their views on emergency accommodation and the free phone service in Dublin, and you paid for this through crowdfunding, through kind of talking to your readers about what you wanted to do and how you were going to do it, and would they donate to help you achieve that. How did that work?
Yeah, so that was based off we'd done a series of stories about sort of homeless services and conditions in hostels, and it kept coming up, and the free phone that people have to call to get a bed for the night if they're stuck in sort of one night at a time accommodation. And somebody had said, I think it's Father Peter McVerry, said, oh, you know, there's never been a survey done of actual people's experiences with this, and we put in under FOI for you know, feedback from people, and there hadn't been that much, so we thought, okay, let's try and do it, but we can't afford to do it ourselves, to survey, you know, 150 people.
So I guess, to do so professionally,
yeah, exactly, and to also have the legitimacy of a proper market research company sort of doing it. So we basically just put that out on social media and through our subscribers and our readers. We got a quote from Amaroc Research. How do you say it?
I don't know. You're there. Amaroc Research
about how much it would cost, and we put out to subscribers. You know, would you be willing to fund this and manage to raise the money? But also, it wasn't just the kind of, I guess, money that they gave. A lot of our readers would be sort of experts in both maybe social science research and also sort of homeless services and housing issues. So there was a lot of input from them as well into the questions and how to go about that and what to get people to, like, what, you know, how many questions people would likely answer, and so that was really, really helpful as well. So it was sort of more than just the money, it was also that feeding in all that input, which is, I guess, what we do all the time, but like that was a bit more earlier in the process and a bit sort of slightly different.
So it's almost like community journalism.
I think it is, and that's kind of sort of what eventually we want to. But we want to do more of that kind of thing. We did our Council Tracker website, which is sort of a database of how Dublin City Councillors have voted, and we did that with readers as well. We had like a day where there was just so much data over the last 4 years to put back in that we had a day where we had pizza and you know, a bit of beer and everybody with their laptops, and we sort of did that. We'd built the website and they kind of populated it. And now we've got a Facebook group of people who, when there are votes at council meetings, put those into the website so we can keep it up. And I guess, so getting people involved in that is great, and it helps people understand how the media works, and it obviously means we can do more than we could with the small team that we have. There's a little bit of ideally we'd be in a position where we could also pay people for their time for that. So like, I want so that then we can make sure that it's not just people who can afford to get involved, who can get involved, but we can also just pay them sort of living wage to do 4 hours of whatever on a Saturday a month or that kind of thing. So there's that balance between like having sort of people involved in it, but not like not exploiting people.
Of course,
which
you're
trying to kind of navigate, but also trying to make sure that we are a route into, you know, a route to get into journalism for people who. You know, it's a privilege to be able to try out journalism in a way that a lot of people don't have or can't afford to have. So if we can also somehow do that for people who wouldn't be able to otherwise, I figure that's helpful, hopefully.
Like I've spoken to a lot of people in the industry in Ireland about the problem with how elite journalism is getting. You know, I spoke to the editor of the Irish Times, Paul O'Neill, actually brought this up to me in the fact that a lot of people back in the day would have made their, you know, would have cut their teeth in regional journalism, but an awful lot of regional newspapers and regional radio stations can no longer afford to hire people because, you know, their budgets have been slashed and their advertising is down. And that is causing a problem at a regional and a national level in terms of who can afford to get into journalism, because there's a lot of unpaid internships out there. And if you can't afford to do an unpaid internship, then, you know, you're out the door before you even knock on it. Yeah. Do you think that the Dublin Inquirer can help in that way in bringing people into the industry that might not otherwise have a voice in the industry.
Yeah, I really, really hope so. Like, we do try to have a strong stress on, you know, constantly trying to reach out, like, okay, what people and which parts of the city are we not reaching very well, and spending the time to go out and meet people, and like, that won't necessarily lead to, you know, stories immediately or lead to columns immediately, but we'll like build up relationships sort of over time. And I guess, I mean, it's something like one of our big problems is, it's not an enormous problem, it's how it's supposed to work, is that you know, our reporters are picked up by other places, you know, and have like the journals picked up a few, and I guess our early cartoonist went to the Times of Ireland, and then we, our sort of sex and gender column, The Roaded, is now in the Irish Times and stuff. So it has very much been a route in. I guess in the last year, we've lost maybe, and Alicia Nalen went to the Sunday Times for a while, so we've lost maybe three reporters in the last year, and for a team of two and plus me, it's a lot of turnover.
Just shows you're well able to spot talent.
I hope so, but and that's exactly how it should be. Like, I really want us to be a stepping stone and a funnel for people. If we had a slightly bigger newsroom, it would be slightly easier to manage that kind of sort of turnover. Yeah. But it's great to be able to say to people that hopefully you'll learn skills here, that people will think, okay, you're ready to come and work for us as well. Yeah.
With a small team, how do you decide what stories are worth your time?
Yeah, it's kind of really, it's constantly renegotiating, like, what we're looking at and what we're covering. I guess, so obviously, like, things to do with Dublin, because we're a local paper, we really do try to prioritise stories that aren't being told elsewhere, because there's just no point in, I guess, any of us like chasing the pack and trying to do breaking news better than RTE or whatever, and or Twitter even, and you know, need to constantly justify our existence, I guess, to people who, because we're reader supported, to people who are paying for the journalism, so they're really conscious that these are voices and people and stories that you wouldn't hear if we didn't exist. So that's kind of what we prioritize. In terms of beats, like housing, transport, what the council is doing, and like little profiles of kind of the people we share the city with, you know, it sounds really sort of I don't know, twee or something, but I like those, the way if those can be sort of woven into some of the larger themes that you don't see in newspapers, like even sort of love or pride, or, you know, those kinds of themes that you see in more in short stories, but kind of run through them in a more subtle way. But I would like us to do more sort of jobs. I think jobs in the city we could be doing a lot more on, and also sort of criminal justice, like rather than crime, and sort of policing and how that is playing out in policing reform on the ground, and how people are experiencing sort of policing. But it's all resources, and so there's that negotiation between, I guess, having a few beats and trying to do those really deep and really well, while also being like, there's so much more we should be covering. And I guess one of the things that we do try to do with reporters is get them to develop a specialization, so that people will get to know how to develop a beat, so that even if they move on to another publication and they're put on to a different beat, they know how to start with that and how to get going on it, and how to engage with whatever the current debate is while also building on it. Yeah. That makes sense.
And in terms of, like, and I know in the paper itself you do have a section for kind of readers' feedback every week. How is that kind of a reflection of the changing relationship, I guess, between readers and journalists? Because we hear a lot about this fake news these days, and, you know, Donald Trump shouting against journalists all the time, and, you know, that's had its own impact in the States, but I think that is coming back to hit us in Ireland now as well. You know, it's a global but local world now. So how does the Dublin Inquirer kind of stand out and prove to its readers that it is different, and that what they read in what you put out, they can trust?
Yeah, I guess there are a few different ways. One is like trying to run lots of events and take things offline. Like, I feel like if people meet us in person, and they can talk to us, and they can talk to us about why we've done something a certain way, then even if we do make mistakes, even if and we put corrections at the bottom when we do, but like, they know that we're acting in good faith. I think being reader supported, they know as well that though it's readers who are funding us, so we don't have like alternative sort of conflicts of interest in quite the same way.
So do you take any advertising income?
We've been taking a really small amount, just because it was really hard to justify saying no, and when we like but only display ads rather than like advertorials or any sponsored content or any of that. In the next couple of months, we're going to get rid of that completely. We're going to kind of see out the obligations that we have for the moment. And then, yeah, and then we're going to just, because we're not like bringing enough in to really sort of, it doesn't really add that much to us. We don't spend time doing it. It's if people approach us for advertising, then yeah, we'll give it. But we get way more, our readers are just way more valuable to us, and it's just, I think it's just a way more sustainable model to be reader supported. So that's what we're going to double down on, I guess. And that means we can do events and spend more time focusing on that, I guess, if we see our job as telling people information that they need to navigate the city. Like events play into that as well, like debates or discussions or even fun stuff that we do. Like we have a, in terms of sort of how readers know we can trust us, we have like a monthly meetup at a bookshop in the Coombe where people can just come along on that night and just have a chat about whatever we're doing. We do a music night there as well. We do occasional pub quizzes, and then we also do occasional debates. Or even the getting people involved in the journalism side of things is also all part of that, I guess. It's also like in terms of reader feedback, like people email a lot or they'll call a lot or text me, or I try to be like just try to be not defensive, I guess. And I know it's hard, like I'm like up late on a Tuesday night till like 2 a.m. and then the first thing you see when you get up on a Wednesday morning is somebody sort of complaining about something. You're like, oh no. But I guess like really trying to not be defensive. And I have
those moments too where I like type out a response to a tweet and then I just delete it because I'm like, no, I don't want to give out.
yeah. And people have given out to me in the past, and sometimes if I think like there's a misunderstanding there, I've actually like I called them up, like track down the next stalker.
Watch out if you're going to complain to Lois, because she will explain herself.
I will explain myself. And so yeah, I just call them up and talk it through, and usually like sometimes they're right about stuff, and I'll be like, oh yeah, you know, you're right, I actually, that was a mistake to do that, or yeah, we'll take that on board next time. And then sometimes once they understand, oh okay, you're not evil and terrible, and you did that.
I can confirm you're not evil. You do not seem evil anyway.
Yeah,
so
evil.
Yeah, I suppose there is that thing there of, you know, readers not expecting journalists to be real people, and there is kind of, because we're so reachable now in a way that we had never been before, you know, like even prior to email, you know, it'd be very hard to get in touch with a journalist except for sending them a letter and not even knowing if they were going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now they can tweet us and they know that we're probably online, or they can, you know, as you said, WhatsApp or whatever to get in touch. It's a lot easier for them to reach us, but then I suppose is there a responsibility on the media to maybe respond to constructive criticism and listen to what the readers are saying?
Yeah, definitely. Like, we definitely try to get back to pretty much everybody. Like, occasionally people just aren't engaging in good faith. And you can tell that, especially issues around immigration or whatever, you can tell that somebody is just prodding and or just wants you to amplify them or whatever. And so that's actually one of the good reasons to get on the phone is good, if you can track people down, because it's... it stops the performative kind of side of it. But yeah, no, I think, like, I don't know, I never really worked in a traditional newsroom sort of 20 years ago, obviously, so I don't know how contactable people were or then and that kind of thing, or how much it's changed or just sped up. I don't know, yeah. Can't remember what was the original question.
We'll move on. So you do have both the print and the digital
yes.
product.
Yeah.
Why both?
Yeah, I guess, so in terms of thinking about like a healthy news diet, like the print is important to us because some people, you know, all the research shows you do absorb more if you read print rather than online. A lot of people do... tell us they want a slow news diet, and they only kind of read the print. So we want to cater to that. There's also the really interesting, I don't know if you saw some of the research that was done after the Independent in the UK went sort of online only and got rid of its print, and they actually measured like attention on articles rather than just sort of clicks went up or whatever, but actually they sort of surveyed attention, how much people took in, and it just plummeted.
Wow.
So I think like part of that is what kind of news you do online and how you present it and being sort of ad-free means that, like, we can completely, like, build the website around what is going to be good for people to, like, good for people to read. So that's sort of, maybe you can offset that in different ways, I don't know. But I just think, yeah, I think there's still a big place for print. I don't think maybe not daily print, but monthly, certainly, like, people really like it. Like, I like it.
What do you think of other local papers in Ireland, or the local paper industry in general?
Yeah, we're really kind of on the outside of it. Like, so I don't really know, like, a whole lot about how they're operating and things like that. And I don't, that sounds really bad, I don't really read them that much. I think a lot would tend to do sort of the breaking news and very short sort of stories that I would think the future is more in the context and the analysis, and also the stories that aren't being told elsewhere. And I think probably they're over-reliant on press releases from sort of local reps and all that kind of thing. But I'll be really interested to see how they do evolve, given that they're ad funded and there's no reason I would think why the newspapers and publications in Ireland would not suffer the same kind of problems around ad funded media as elsewhere. Just, I think we're just a little bit sort of lagging, and obviously they are already facing problems, but like really reaching a crunch point in stuff maybe hasn't quite come yet.
What do you think of the attitude of The Guardian in that they feel that if they charge people to read their content, then they're blocking it from a huge proportion of society?
That's a massive thing that we considered. Like, now, like, so a few months ago, we put up the prices a little bit, and we put up a bit of a paywall for people who read more than a certain amount online. But we also,
so what would people pay now on a monthly basis?
Either €5 or €8, and then some people pay 10 or 20 just because they want to.
It's pretty reasonable, to be fair.
Yeah, it is reasonable, but some people are broke, so we do have an option on it that you can just email and we'll set you up an account for free.
Have many people taken you up on that?
Like a growing number. Some people who are just like, look, my rent has just gone up, I can't do it anymore. Or, and you know, some people who've been paying for a while and then they're just going through a hard time. So like when we try to, I mean, we don't even ask why, like it's very low threshold, like, and no one is taking, like, no, I'm trying to think of them. And not a swear word. No one's taking advantage. Like, and I think that's something that we can stress more, because like that accessibility was like something that we talked about over and over again, and how we make sure that we are accessible, but also like people understand that you have to, that it costs money. Like,
yeah, you have to eat.
Yeah, you have to eat.
And unfortunately, journalists can't live on fresh air.
And overall, no one's complained about that. I think because they know we have that option. Like, yeah, I'm sort of happy with that as a medium, I guess. Yeah.
So looking at the year ahead, what are your plans?
Seeing out our advertising kind of obligations and then getting rid of ads completely is going to be one. Like, in terms of coverage of the local elections, we're planning to do hopefully a kind of, there's an NYU journalism guy called Jay Rosen who has this idea of a citizens agenda around elections. So making sure that what issues and what questions and what coverage happens is based on what people want, rather than, you know, what politicians or bad actors or whatever want. So we're going to be doing hopefully some kind of citizen journalism project to try to do a citizens agenda around that for the city and get people involved in reporting on that as well.
It's going to be the Dublin thing. Politicians are very nervous right now.
I don't know, we'll see. And we'll see how it goes. Like, it'll be a big thing. So that'll be, and then I guess like trying to build so we can have a couple more reporters would be great. Like, those are the three main things, I guess.
Expansion wise, do you see it as always being the Dublin Inquirer? Do you see the paper going national, or do you see yourselves maybe setting up in another city somewhere in Ireland?
I don't know. I would love it if people would take our model and do it themselves. Like, and I'd be happy to talk to them about like how we've gone about it and all that kind of stuff, if they're able. Like, I think I kind of want to be a journalist.
Like, there isn't a bit of capitalism in you. It's insane. No. You don't want to build a media empire.
I don't. Sometimes people are like, don't you want to be more ambitious? But to me, like, If we manage to build a sustainable local newspaper, I'll be like, oh my God, that is more than I ever thought I would ever do. But like, I think if, if we can get this sustainable, I'd love to be able to do more journalism myself at some point. That sounds really maybe selfish, but I like doing journalism.
It's clearly your passion, you know? You are a small and independent newspaper, which it has so many advantages, yeah. But do you worry about defamation and how that might impact on you?
Yeah, at the moment, I guess we're lucky because there's really not really much benefit in suing us. Like, you know, people tend to go for sort of more attractive targets. We do kind of worry about that, but I mean, we do what everybody does and just try to make sure that we get everything right and have everything backed up and I don't know, like, that's, I don't really see any better way of dealing with it. Like,
That we get them to legislate to change the defamation laws in Ireland. There's a little call out for politicians out there, if they are listening in 2019, there's your aim ahead, you know. Well, I think that we have covered off a lot there, Lois. Where can people subscribe or find the Dublin Inquirer?
They can check out the stories that we've done at dublininquirer.com, and then we've also got a kind of bunch of stockists, not loads, throughout the city. There should be a map on the website around that. Or they can email me at info@dublininquirer.com and I'll get back to them.
Excellent. I recommend our listeners make it their New Year's resolution to support independent journalism and subscribe to the Dublin Inquirer and, of course, the SBP. That is all for this installment of the Media Matters podcast. Thanks so much to Lois of the Dublin Inquirer for popping into studio, and thanks to you all for tuning in. If you liked what you heard, please share Media Matters on your social media channels, rate us on iTunes, and subscribe. If you have feedback or any suggestions for future interviewees, tweet me on Colette_Sexton. Until next time.